ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. We've got a fantastic broadcast today. It's all about workers' comp, personal injury, and the medical. We're going to be talking about third-party cases on this broadcast. Get a great education. We all go to work, and we want to come home the same way we left. But in the case that something goes on, we want to make sure that we're educated and we understand, how to deal with situations so we're protected. One of the things that we hear constantly, and we have an injured workers program with the labor community, is I don't want to make waves. I don't want to, I don't want to start trouble. You're not starting trouble. If you get injured in work, you have rights, but you also have responsibilities. There's also a wide array of other areas where somebody may have rights that they are not aware of. The defense side has, they go into protocols and, you need to know your rights because you never really know what is a catastrophic injury and what is not one. So you need to have not only know your rights, be educated and have access to top professionals across the board. So we do have a phenomenal show. We've got some great professionals. And we're going to be happy to educate everybody here. Happy holidays, of course, to everybody on the panel. Great to have everybody. Let me go around the horn and have everybody introduce themselves and to our listeners. If you will, Dr. Jim Brady.
Hi, Dr. James Brady. I have offices in East Oak Lane, Ben Salem, and Port Richmond near Kensington. I specialize in neck and back pain. I've treated over 17,000 patients suffering with neck and back pain. And we have complete exercise, physical therapy, chiropractic, and water therapy at our facilities. We accept all insurances.
Okay, we'll stick with the medical theme first. Dr. Bruce Grossinger, the sports doctor. By the way, Doc, great to see you on the Eagles post-game show this week.
Yeah, a lot of talk about Jalen Hurts. I have a feeling we'll be talking about that. I've been around the clock. For some reason, people want to talk about the quarterback here. I'm not sure why that is.
You can't figure that out, why?
They seem to be putting that together. But Dr. Bruce Grossinger, I have two practices. We're at the airport. We're in Claymont, Delaware. Grossinger Neuropain Specialist, also regenerative medicine. We treat a lot of the professional athletes here. It's Philadelphia PRP and Stem Cell Institute. And we've been doing this about 30 years, and it's great to see the esteemed panel today.
Awesome. Thank you, Doc. Rob DeSantro, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
It's our pleasure. If you will, introduce yourself to the Delaware Valley.
Sure. So my name is Rob DeSantro. I'm with the firm of DeSantro Molloy. We handle exclusively third-party personal injury cases, meaning cases against somebody besides your employer when you're hurt at work. I've recently switched over from the defense side, so I'm well-versed in what the defense does when somebody's injured at work and their strategies and tactics to basically head off any claims, even when they're very viable claims.
Absolutely. And by the way, you're not, as you well know, you're not alone in switching over from what we call the dark side. Almost every great attorney, that it does plaintiffs law, cut their teeth at the very least on the defense side. So, and it's a great education to be able to talk to your clients and let them know what's going on from that perspective. Because especially, and we're going to get into it in your world, these cases sometimes last a couple of years, and understanding the ebbs and flows can be incredibly important. We on point?
Definitely.
I thought so, Frank.
Udenson.
By the way, we were going to have a giveaway on that one if they could.
Oh, really?
Right, if they could spin. Frank, obviously, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
A little bit about yourself and the firm.
My name is Frank Udenson, and we do workers' comp. I'm with the firm Win Big Law. Don't just win big. Newton, Udenson, Hill. We're in the Philadelphia area. We focus on workers' comp, veterans disability benefits, as well as Social Security disability benefits.
Awesome. Fantastic. And in the workers' comp world, as we all well know, individuals get injured. They try to handle claims themselves and end up wrapped up like a pretzel because their intentions. You don't get that trophy, do you, Frank, for getting injured on a Friday, sucking it up over the weekend because you know what? On Monday, you might feel better. You come in on Monday, hopefully you do feel better, but if you don't, they don't give you a big award ceremony for, you know, taking it, you know, for the team. And you know, often they hold it against you for not reporting it right away. What's that about?
Right. And a lot of people do have the perception that they'll either go it alone or they don't want to make waves with their employer.
Right.
But what they have to understand is that your employer by law is required to have workers' comp insurance. And it's not your employer who's actually flipping the bills as far as wage loss, unless your employer is self-insured. So there's a third party, there's another insurance carrier. They're ultimately making the determinations whether you, the injured worker, get paid or not. So you're not necessarily making waves by pursuing a workers' comp claim, and it's what you're entitled to begin with. And the insurance companies themselves, the adjusters, they have their own attorneys as well. They've been doing this a long time. So one of the things we tell clients too is that, you know, insurance companies, they're sophisticated, they have adjusters, they know what they're doing, but they also have their lawyers too. So you should have one as well if you get hurt on the job.
And having said that, you know, it's certainly, you always have that disposition, you know, individuals, you know, try the first thing they do. And we're going to kind of take that, we're going to talk about third party cases. This way we can kind of involve everybody in this process. So naturally, let's just take it from a standard process. Somebody gets injured on the job, okay, Frank? And we're going to start, obviously, you know, with yourself. Then we're going to go to Rob and involve that the medical part of it, because this is where, you know, in a sense, things can start. And so so we'll go with, instead of, and Rob, I know sometimes you'll get cases and it'll be you'll realize it's a work injury and you'll obviously send it over to a work comp to handle that area. But we're going to take it as if, you know, if somebody got injured on the job, comes to you, Frank, because you're a work injury person. How often when somebody walks in the office, are they clueless almost about everything, unless they've been hurt before? And in the fact they may have even tried to handle the situation themselves and found out that they were, you know, they're dealing with a panel physician, they're still hurt, they can't figure out, they're confused. Let alone knowing about Social Security disability if they're older, and of course, a personal injury case. They come in, they're clueless.
It happens frequently. A lot of times, too, they might have had contact with the insurance adjuster or the claims manager, and so they think, oh, well, I've already been speaking with the insurance company. I'm good. I don't need your help. But what they don't know is that the insurance company, I mean, not for nothing, their main goal is to not pay you what you're entitled to. So just for instance, we had a case one time where a guy tried, he got hurt on the job and he tried and he got contacted by the insurance carrier and there was an offer to settle his case for $10,000. He goes to workers' comp court because workers' comp settlements have to be approved by a judge. So he goes to workers' comp court and the judge tells him, hey, you need to speak with an attorney. So the settlement didn't go through and he ends up calling our office. And then we end up settling his case for $70,000 about 45, 60 days later. So that's just what an attorney actually can do. The insurance company in that situation had to clear it.
They took a shot at that.
Yeah, right? a big shot. I mean, they tried to pull the wool over his eyes, tried to take advantage of the case. It's a case that they tried to quickly settle on their own with him by himself for $10,000 when his case was worth way more than that. So that's one of the things that you encounter a lot of times is that people just – they don't really understand the nuances of workers' comp and what they're entitled to. There's wage loss, there's facial disfigurement, specific loss, that's what it's referred to. There's a lot of things that go into workers' comp claims and a lot of rights that you have, and it's not wise to just try to go it alone and do it by yourself.
Yeah, you mentioned the insurance companies. I've heard stories where the owner of a company was standing next to the individual or driving next to the individual that got injured. He actually supported the claim, and still there was pushback from the insurance company because the insurance company, you know, obviously is carrying the ball ultimately on that situation.
Yeah, yeah, we had that. I encountered a similar situation one time. I was in a hearing, and the owner of the company in that situation was testifying and saying that they wanted their worker to get paid, but it was still ultimately the insurance company's decision. So it's not necessarily, and I tell our clients too that it's not your job. It's not your manager who is not deciding to pay you. They're not the one. They don't have anything against you right now. It's a third part. It's an insurance company. You've never met this individual, the adjuster, and they're basically they see your name on a piece of paper, and that's all you are to them is a number. And if they deny your claim, it has nothing to do with you specifically as a person.
Now, when you talk about a work comp claim and somebody gets injured on a job, they finally end up at your door. They can't theoretically, unless it's a real – I've done a lot of shows on this topic, but rarely – I don't think I've ever done a show where somebody can sue their employee. So most of the time, somebody can't, you're not allowed to sue your employee. At a grand bargain, you trade your rights for the opportunity to, you know, have workers' comp insurance.
Right.
So it's not no fault, correct? Talk
right.
about that.
Yeah, so you can't sue your job for negligence. We get a lot of clients who they want to sue their job. Maybe their job didn't give them proper safety equipment, and that's why they got hurt. Or they took advantage of them, and that's why they got hurt. And they want to go after their employer for their injuries, for pain and suffering, things of that nature. But the flip side of the workers' comp law is that it's supposed to be easier to get workers' comp because all you have to prove is that you were injured within the course and scope of your job. But that's not always the case. So the trade-off is you're supposed to be able to get benefits easier, but then you can't go after your employer for negligence and for pain and suffering. So that's the real kicker, because you see some serious injuries that what they're paid is based upon their average weekly wage, which might be low, but you might have catastrophic injuries and still they're not entitled to pain and suffering. It's just wage loss and disability.
So what happens if somebody's swinging a hammer, they miss the pin that they're pinning, trying to knock into a column or something, and they hit their arm and they break their arm? Does that get held against them?
No. It is a no fault. It doesn't matter necessarily if they did something wrong. There's exceptions. What's considered horseplay if you're just messing around. But
okay.
There are exceptions to every rule. So like any good lawyer, I can just say it depends, because that's really the answer you get from most lawyers. It depends. But if you do it, and if you just make a mistake and get hurt,
it's your own fault.
It still would be workers' comp, because it just matters if you're within the course and scope of your employment.
Okay, so let's talk about third party. One of the issues, mm-hmm. Before we talk about third party, let's talk about the medical part of it. What are the requirements? I mean, this is a big deal right here. We've all grown up, in our house, with our family, especially when we were younger, the family doctor was a part of your family. So you trusted that situation constantly. Obviously, you get injured, you get sick, you call your doctor. Sometimes the doctor, when I was a kid, would come over to the house, whatever, go to the doc. He's part of the family. You get injured on the job, and let's just talk about a stereotypical situation. I get injured, first thing I'm asking, because I was a union worker for 20 years, first thing I'm doing is going to my foreman and saying, where do I go? Okay. He, may not even know the rules, but he's like, well, you got to go to WorkNet or whatever you call it, right? And next thing you go there, and you've heard the nightmare stories where somebody is, union works. One story I have with one of our union leaders, he said to me, guy looked at me from across the room and told me I was okay. Couldn't lift my shoulder up. Couldn't lift my right arm up, wanted to go to work, because obviously a union worker wants to go to work. He's losing money, even though, thank God for workers' comp. But the panel situation was confusing to them. Now they're all of a sudden, they're in, totally confused. They go through this, they're months, their injuries on the line, and their confidence is shot. Obviously, when they get to your office, what's the first thing you do?
So there are panel doctors, which is basically just a list of employers that your job wants you to treat with for the first 90 days after an injury. a lot of times, workers, they're injured and they're told to go to certain places and they don't know what their rights are. So the law is if you sign something called a rights and acknowledgement form at the time of your hiring and after your injury, it has to be two times, then you have to treat with the panel doctors for the first 90 days after an injury. The significance of that is that you could treat with whoever you want, but then the insurance company is only liable for payment with their panel doctors, so long as there's that form signed at the time hiring and after your injury. I almost never see it where someone has it at the time after their injury, and even though despite the fact that it's those two times. So you say you treat with the panel doctors for the first 90 days. After the 90 days, you can treat with whomever you want, which is something that the insurance carriers don't really tell a lot of injured workers. I find that a lot of workers are surprised they can just treat with whomever they want after the 90 days.
And how often, the worker, I've talked to workers who don't even know if they signed a panel acknowledgement letter at sign-up. Say it's a guy working on a high-rise building. Now, big contractors typically know that, but we have a lot of small signatory contractors also. They don't even know. They came out, it's a five-day job. Okay,
right,
it's
right.
A barber shop, for crying out loud. And when you ask them, did you sign a panel acknowledgement letter? They don't know what it is, and at the same time, they don't know if there was one posted. And they certainly, if they got injured seriously, then I run into them and give them something to sign on the way into the ambulance.
Yeah, exactly. So in that situation, they could treat with whomever they want, and we get that from time to time too, where. Maybe it's a defense attorney or adjuster saying, you know, they have to go treat with the panel. And it's like, okay, well, can you provide us with the signed forms both at the time of time?
Does that happen after? That's obviously what happens after you get the case, right?
Right, yeah, that is what happens after the case if they're trying to push or direct care at that time.
Why is that so important, that situation right there in regards to, you know, having the right to go see your own physician?
Well, I think if you have a right to go see your own physician, or at least a physician that we can direct you to, you might get better care in the sense that if diagnostic studies are needed, such as MRIs, things like that, you won't take a long time. At least my experience of what I've seen, you go to work now, you go to Concentra, you'll do a period of physical therapy, you'll go all the time. They won't really find out what's wrong with you until none of that works, and then they order something. By that point in time, maybe it's 5 months later, 6 months later, then you get a study, maybe it's an MRI, it shows some sort of damage or something in your back. Well, at that point,
right. They'll
say, well, this was 6 months after the fact. There was no swelling on the MRI, nothing to establish it was traumatic in nature, which the only reason you didn't get that MRI is because the doctors didn't order it for you. So the benefit of at least coming to us and us being able to refer you out to somewhere, for instance, somewhere like Healthbridge Chiropractic, shout out to Healthbridge, they might be able to get you into an MRI, like Pennsauken MRI or somewhere like that, Northeast Open MRI, somewhere where you can actually see what's going on, whether or not you have a tear or some sort of back condition.
Does that happen a lot?
It does. It does happen a lot. So the benefit of at least having an attorney and someone that can direct your care, at least try to manage it, you can get the proper care that you need as opposed to a panel physician that might just try to kick the can down the road and ultimately just try to push you back to work to appease the employer.
Now, let's do this. Rob DeSandro, we're going to get into the third-party case. Trust me on that one. But I want to talk to the medical professionals also right now to get that you know, to kind of talk about that from the medical side, Dr. Bruce Grossinger, and of course, Dr. Jim Brady, take me through the process when you get somebody who just got a call, you know, who just saw their attorney and now they're coming in to see you. Maybe they've been going through this panel process for a long time and now they walk in probably like a dog has been beat too much, as Springsteen would say. They walk in your office and they've gone through the gamut, if you would. What's your process?
Well, number one, I tell them today's day one for you. Basically, and I usually spend more than most people spend. I spend an hour for each new consultation because it's necessary. I've got to hear a whole story. I don't use templates. You won't see that here. EMR, the government's pushing us to do EMR. Every office visit looks the same. That's bad medicine. I use an old Olympus, has dust on it, okay? So the fact is, they come in, I do a history and physical, a very detailed history of the injury, and then I decide what's necessary. And again, the nice thing is I'm the quarterback of the team. I don't do physical therapy. I save it for Dr. Brady, Matt Marcus, Dr. Craven, Healthbridge. So I'm a guy, you know, I'm one guy, I see them relatively infrequently. But I got to set the table like a quarterback, all right? And if it's 2 days after the job, they told me you have to go to WorkNet, Concentra. Most of those people are not even doctors. They're not what we call RDs. You know what that stands for?
What's that?
Real doctors. They're not real doctors. They're nurses. They're, you know, janitorial staff. But they're masquerading as doctors. And what I tell them is my job is to help you not to get paid. And you know what? Ironically, in 32 years, I don't remember one case where that 90-day rule kept me from getting paid. Not even one. You know why? Because not one of those panels, whether it's 4, 6, or any multiplicities of even numbers, none of them have neurologists. So they basically defaulted. But I wear a lot of hats, as you know, medical orthopedist, regenerative medicine, concussions. So when they come in, what I do is I do a history and physical. They have a neck and shoulder problem. They're going to get, in many cases, a neck and shoulder MRI. They're going to get medicines that are non-narcotic to help them. They're going to be sent. Where do you live? Well, I live in Chad's Ford. I'll send you to Dr. Karp. Where are you at Lankin? I'll send you to Dr. DePasqua from Healthbridge. Where, you know, Dr. Roman in Upper Darby. So in my mind, I've got a grid of where they should get their therapy. And I look him in the eye and I say, look, you got to do this. You got to do your therapy. Because if you don't show up, if they tell you to show up three times a week and you don't, for whatever reason, I know you're hurting, you're going to hurt yourself. And I also strongly believe in representation. People are naive. They come in and they'll say, well, you know, I've been injured. You know, I'm getting my paycheck. I'm off work. They're not giving me any heat. But they just sent me to some guy in Ballykinwood over here for an IME. And the guy does about 30 in an hour. And he looked at him across the room and says, you look fine. So that's what it is. Unfortunately, there's a Hippocratic oath. Do thy no harm. But there's whole, I would call them nests where these IME doctors live. And there's only one guy in Philadelphia. I trade with him in Columbia. I won't mention his name, but I won't defame him on air. Off air, I will. But the fact is, you know who he is. And he's around the Abington area. When I trade with him in Columbia, we were both learning how to do EEGs and epilepsy. We were with Dr. Pedley. I knew this guy would be a good doctor. Right now, he's a little Darth Vader. He's gone to the dark side. The last time I saw a guy with no arms and no legs, he sent it back to Boeing to do sheet metal assembly work. So I said, the fact is, you got to have a backbone as a doctor, okay? You're also up against rehab nurses. A lot of people trust the nurse, just like you see the nurse in Vietnam and MASH. They're there to help you. These nurses are there to preclude you. When they hear my name, it's like the Antichrist. They know I'm going to treat him well. They'll do anything. They'll send him to a guy. A guy will still be smearing leeches onto him as long as he's working for the company. So, yes, I sound cynical. Do I believe that 80% of the cases get denied on their face and need lawyers? Damn straight.
Yeah, well, Doc, tell us what you really think. let me go to Dr. Jim Brady. Doc, when somebody comes into your door, they've been through the process. Talk about what your process is, and at the same time, you can certainly understand where Dr. Grossinger's coming from.
I don't even know how to follow that. Wow, Bruce, that's amazing. And it's the truth. I refer to you. I think the world of you. You're an amazing doctor. When we get patients, and many times they're from the panel physician, and there's no workup done whatsoever. They come in, they don't know what's wrong with them, and I have to start from scratch. And usually it's a 90-day wasted period of time. So the most important thing I would say for patients is, as soon as the 90 days are up, get to Dr. Grossinger, get to myself, as you said, Matt Marcus, Healthbridge Chiropractic, get a proper workup, so that way.
When you say Matt Marcus, let me take a shot at this.
As a guy, take a shot at Matt.
Hold on, no. He's a real nice guy. He's a real shy guy. Not a good talker. Real quiet and
yeah, that's the same one, right?
Matt. He, by the way, he had his own show here. We've done a lot of radio together. Go ahead, Doc. You're right on.
So it's important. You cannot treat a patient unless you know what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
So the only thing I want to add with what Bruce said, he says that his first visit he spends an hour. I spend about an hour and a minute.
Yeah.
So that makes me better than Bruce.
You got me.
61 minutes.
You know what? Your uncle, I could say, you just beat me in the arm wrestling contest. You got me by, and he wins by a nose. It's a photo finish.
We do have some fun on the broadcast, guys. Go ahead, Doc. I'm sorry.
Well, I've been in practice 35 years now. We've treated 17,000 patients, and we've seen our share of patients, unfortunately, that have been neglected by the panel physicians and by the insurance carrier. They've really gotten the bad end of the stick.
Well, what ends up happening also, and I find it really irritating, is the fact that individuals, you know, while you're fighting for their rights and trying to get, you know, them paid and all those things, and you guys all mentioned the fact that diagnostics can be a real problem. Their injuries are suffering and at the same time. It becomes especially, you know, once they walk into your office, now all of a sudden you're going to bat for them, you're doing all those things. And like the doc said, if they've been misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all because there was no diagnostics. Now you have an individual whose injury may not even get better because if depending upon when they get to your office. And how long do they have to first thing somebody should do when they get injured on the job is what?
Notify a supervisor.
How long do you have to do that?
You have to notify a supervisor of your injury within 120 days of the occurrence, but that's just what the law is in terms of providing notice or whether or not you're barred.
Yeah, so they're not going to, you could walk in there with day 120 and you know.
Yeah, unless 120 falls on a weekend and then it has to be the following Monday. But Essentially, ideally, you want to tell someone right away because the longer you wait to tell someone and maybe you think, oh, I'm going to go home, I'm just going to walk this off or I'm going to sleep this off and I'm not going to say anything, that'll always be used against you at some point. It'll say, okay, well, you didn't tell anybody right away, so therefore you weren't injured. So it's best to tell someone right away, tell a supervisor, and then go to the doctor as opposed to just trying to manage it yourself.
Right. And that's where the trophy and the thing comes in on, right. You know, you come in on Monday, they don't give you the presentation, you know, they may hold it against you.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, they 100% will.
So let's bring Rob DeSandro into this equation. There's something called third-party case where you would be, as a personal injury attorney, are working with the workers' compensation attorney because there's another element in that situation. Talk about it, if you will.
Sure. So one of the most common situations we see, for example, on a construction site, there are multiple different entities working on that construction site. Obviously, when you're on a construction site, you have an employer, typically one employer. If you're hurt by somebody else's negligence besides your employer, there may be what's called a third-party claim. The importance of a third-party claim is we're not only pursuing a claim for any wage loss above and beyond your workers' compensation payments for wage loss. The more important thing is we're seeking to compensate our clients for their pain and suffering from whatever injury they sustained. You mentioned the fact that a lot of people think they can handle their workers' compensation claim themselves because they have a clear-cut injury, they're getting paid.
They think nothing could go wrong, yeah. Right?
The issue with that is when that happens, they typically don't reach out to an attorney of any sort for that period. And all the meanwhile, whatever condition caused the accident may be changed, modified, repaired, replaced by whoever ultimately was responsible. So key example, let's say somebody's on a construction site and a stairwell collapses or a staircase collapses. This has happened to us multiple times now. We get a call months after it happened. So then we're trying to recreate what occurred and trying to pinpoint what caused that stairwell to collapse.
Yeah.
Based on photographs alone. We want phone calls right when it happens so we can have an expert out there immediately before anything gets changed. It's much easier for an expert to do their job and help us understand what led to an accident such as a collapse when they're seeing it firsthand.
And you talk about that evidence, and that is a great, great point, okay? What do they call it? Spoliation, okay? Where the potential negligent party gets rid of the evidence. Well, in many cases, and I don't know how you get this, what's the average? There is, I'm sure, no average, but I'm going to ask anyway. It's a work injury. So the two most common types would be a construction site or a driving, somebody who drives for a living. We talk about third-party cases. When do you normally get them? Point of injury, soon after, or could it be months down the road?
Unfortunately, typically, oftentimes, it's later down the road. For example, we just got a call recently on something, again, a collapse, and by the time it came to us, the condition had been changed. So fortunately, one of the coworkers of our client had taken good pictures, so we'll be able to work off of that. But again, we'd much rather have an expert on site immediately.
Yeah, and if an employer or whoever the third party is, whatever the situation is, say somebody doesn't get contacted for, say you don't get contacted for 6 months, okay? Is it still spoliation if you know, in other words, if they weren't notified to maintain it, and it's a reasonable time?
Well, that's as soon as a case comes into us, we put spoliations in the mail immediately, email, right. fax, any type of line of communication.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying if they got rid of it 2 months ago, at, you know, at the point of the case, and it's a statute of limitation, for example, 2 years. So if you get it after 3 to 4, maybe even 6 months, and they held on to the evidence but got rid of it before you know, I'm giving them a shot here, but I'm saying if there's no evidence left, what do you do at that point?
Well, at that point, it becomes a more of a legal argument as to, it's a gray area. If they have not received our spoliation request letter or preservation of evidence letter, then they have an argument, hey, we didn't know that we need to preserve this.
Yeah.
That's why we want to get letters out
as soon as possible.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And at that point, what are the first things? And I'll ask both attorneys, first things in regards to evidence, not obviously reporting an injury, but let me throw a scenario out there that would be, for the listener, that would be a cut and dry third party casing compared to a workers' comp situation. You're walking a high rise building downtown. Somebody's walking in the hole. That's the core where the comms get all, you know, they get laid out and all those things before it even comes out to a work floor on ground level. And there's a ditch that's dug in that area. If I'm walking with the crane and we're walking a piece, we're laying out the steel, that hole, if I dug that hole and I fall in it, that's a work comp case, right? That's not a theoretically.
Right.
But if another contractor digs that hole, there's no caution tape around it, I'm walking with the crane and the piece and I go falling in the hole and I get injured, that's potentially a third-party case, right?
Sure. It comes down to OSHA responsibilities on the work site and who ultimately has those responsibilities.
Okay.
So there could be multiple different parties beyond your employer that have the responsibility to either put up fall protection, put up warnings, do something to eliminate the risk that presents.
So let's talk about the evidence part. Assuming that individuals are going to call an attorney to protect their rights, and may, you know, if they go back to work, that's one thing. But you know, is there any out of pocket costs to contact obviously one of your two firms, to get that education, at least a consultation right away, and what evidence should they be collecting at that point, or the job steward?
Yeah, there's no cost to call and at least get a consultation or ask questions concerning your rights. There's also no cost, at least from a workers' comp standpoint, to have someone represent you unless you have to go to court. So workers' comp, the attorneys, myself, other workers' comp attorneys in PA, you work off a contingency fee. But the contingency fee doesn't always take your benefit. So say someone calls, they're receiving workers' comp already, but they're starting to get letters from the insurance company, you have an exam, they want them to be examined, their checks are coming late, things like that, and they just want to have an attorney. They can have an attorney. They can call. They can sign up with our office. We're not going to be taking a fee from their case because their case isn't in litigation. So they can have the benefit of attorney without paying an attorney's fee. Attorney's fees for workers' comp only kick in when you have to go to court to maybe defend against the insurance company trying to stop your benefits, or you're going to court to try to turn your benefits on if they've been improperly stopped or never granted in the first place.
And Rob, in your case, is it also a contingency fee agreement?
Yes, and that's the important thing here, because people sometimes probably are scared to contact an attorney because they think, oh, we're going to have to pay expenses, especially when it comes to getting experts out on site after an accident. Our firm puts out all that money, and we're not looking to the client and saying, hey, you got to pay us X amount of dollars. And that's important because when I was on the defense side, as soon as something happened, insurance companies had experts retained immediately, out on site immediately. So we should be doing the same thing when we can.
Right, absolutely. And people, they have that mindset, and you know, they're not litigious, but Dr. Grossinger, somebody walks in your office and or however they get in your office, at that point they're beat up, they got injured, but it's a work injury that could be a third party case. The attorneys have the contingency fee situation where there's no out of pocket costs for the individual to get that education. In your world, what does that mean in regards to, are they paying a retainer or a premium? How's that work?
When patients come into my office, whether it be, and we spoke off the air before, there are certain people here in Pennsylvania, you could go to an ER and mostly your car accident case is exhausted for $5,000. The fact of the matter is, we want to see them. We don't tell them they can't come in. One big thing for you gentlemen is that we take something called Keystone First. I'm the only private doctor in Philadelphia that takes a Medicaid derivative. Keystone First is the dominant player. I have a contract with them. They exhaust their benefits, and usually, if they got Keystone First, you can't find anybody. You're going to send them to Crozier, and you've got some guy who's going to do some spit and whittling over there. Again, coming back to humor. But the fact is, I get cases all the time where they're denied workers' comp, and they have no backup. The fact is, I have a duty to them. I treat them exactly the same way. They're denied. Again, if I see that there is no, you know, for instance, the other day I had somebody who a year later lost 35 pounds and had a ulnar neuropathy. Turns out he had a cancer, which I discovered, and I might have saved his life because I set him for a colonoscopy. And I didn't have tunnel vision for that workers' comp matter because I was treating him for a neck problem. But when he came in and I saw him, he looked cachectic. You always have to be a doctor first and foremost. And I have an obligation. I'm going to see them. And especially in my world, a lot of doctors, when I'm in Delaware and I have a big office there, the dominant orthopedic practice, you could have an open comp case. If you don't have blue chip backup coverage, they won't see you no matter what. You could stand on your head and spit dimes. I try to be the exact opposite. I try to be available to everybody on my cell phone. My injured people have my business cell right here if they need me. And they ask me questions. And a lot of times, they don't think they need representation. Or it's a car accident case. The other one we haven't determined, the most common that I see is a third-party work-related car accident. I had a lady who's actually a doctor. She was involved in one car accident. She's a doctor. Then the car was drivable. She goes to her second job as a psychologist, gets in a second, more crippling car accident, and just didn't know what to do. And the employer tied her in knots. She didn't realize that she had not one but two third-party cases. Not being a lawyer but playing one on TV, I said, you're going to need, we're going to reach out to this comp lawyer. And they had somebody that they worked with. And now this person's a doctor who's completely flummoxed, doesn't know what to do. And this happens all the time. They need direction. They have all kinds of legal questions. And I said, look, you're not suing your employer. This person's going to work in the background. Even if you want to work, you might not be able to work. This one individual was a psychologist, and she wanted to wrap things up by year's end, and she was getting worse and worse. By year's end, we took her off work, and she had the attorney in tow. So it's very important for there to be a healthy dialogue, even picking up the phone and saying, look, I saw Mr. Jones, if I'm talking to Rob here. This person has a potential rotator cuff tear. And yeah, they had their neck MRI, but I think they're like Jalen Hurts. They might have a rotator cuff tear, a separated shoulder. We're going to order the diagnostics.
Is that possible?
Get the EMGs all the time. Ugh. All the time. So the key is I try to not put up barriers of resistance to treatment. And I try to communicate well with the patients, have them like our office, which they typically do. We people in my office have been there 10, 15, 20 years. And they know how to service these people. And we try to create a welcoming and nurturing environment.
Dr. Brady, they walk into your office, same scenario. Maybe they have a claim petition, okay? They're not getting paid. Is there out-of-pocket costs if it's a work injury in that situation? Or do you work with the, obviously you work with the patient and the attorney?
Oh, we absolutely work. We don't, with the workman's comp, many cases are in the process of litigation and the providers don't get paid right away. And matter of fact, we never even discuss it with the patient. We don't want them to be concerned about that. We want them to be concerned with just their healing. And I say this to every single one of my workman's comp patients without exception. I say to them, you have two experts on your side. I'll handle all the medical and medical referrals and coordinating of your case, and your legal matters will be up to your lawyers. You have nothing to worry about. Your only job is to get better.
And Rob, when it's a third party case, is it what? How do you handle the medical? Obviously, with workers' comp, there's different parameters. But if it's a third party case, do you typically how do you deal with that?
In terms of pushing them to
well, you know, like in other words, do you have when it is a third party case, if they already have if the work comp attorney they're working with, you know, obviously has referred them out to attorneys, or if they're working with the panel doctor and you get the case first, do you get involved in that situation?
Sure, it really depends on how happy the client is with the treatment.
Sure,
certainly, if a client complains to us that they don't feel like they're being given the time and attention that they deserve for their injuries from the doctor they're treating with, then at that point, we obviously work to find them a doctor that does give them the time that they deserve and hopefully the treatment that helps them improve from wherever they're at.
Let's talk about setting up expectations with clients that walk in the office. In your world, Frank, you know, the same way in your world, Rob, there's ebbs and flows in these cases. I walk in, I clearly just got injured. I fell in the hole that was dug by the other contractor. Okay, I now know. I've met with the TUIs. But talk about that initial conversation when you're setting up expectations, because there's ebbs and flows in both situations. You know, just so you know, my buddy got $4 million from Starbucks because a coffee fell on him. You should be able to get me my $5 million because I fell 15 feet, right? Whoa, hold on for a second. But my point, and in your world, Frank, they may get claim petitioned, okay? And they may get beat up a little bit, and there may be games being played by that other side. And in both of your situations, not wanting that client, wanting the client to understand, in a sense, the ebbs and flows of a case or what's possible, and the fact that you guys have it, but so they don't self-destruct in the process. Talk about that conversation at the beginning and how important it is to communicate. Then how to communicate with one another.
Right. So especially with workers' comp, there can be a lot of frustration, obviously, because it's not as if you planned on being injured. Except for when I spill stuff on the floor. And then, yeah. You wouldn't expect to be. It's like Slippin' Jimmy from Better Call Saul. Yeah. So if you're obviously not expecting to be injured. So if you get injured, what happens is the insurance company has 21 days to accept or deny your claim. That's 3 weeks. 3 weeks if you're living paycheck to paycheck is a long time. So the insurance company could, in theory, wait till the 21st day and then accept your claim. Meanwhile, you just waited 3 weeks with no money. Or they could just not file anything and just drag it out, at which point necessitates you getting an attorney and filing a claim petition. All the while, you're going without money. So workers' comp is litigated over what's really a 12-month process. You file a claim, there's a hearing, both sides get 90 days for evidence. So then at that point, you're at 6 months. Then there's what's called a briefing schedule, which is basically a written oral argument, so to speak, which takes another couple months. So you could be without money for 12 months while you're trying to get your claim accepted. All the while, the insurance companies, they know this, so they drag it.
They're trying to smoke you out in a way.
Yeah, exactly, because they know, I mean, who can really go a year without any sort of wages or benefits or anything like that? So the longer that they drag it out, the more likely you'll maybe just give up and find, not necessarily give up, but you'll try to find another job that you can do. The employer's not accommodating you, so you just try to find something else. So that's what they do.
If you can.
Yeah, if you can. I mean, sometimes you can't even do that. There's no sedentary light-duty work. You can't find anything. And we've had clients go homeless during the process, eventually have cases be granted. I mean, we had a client one time testify. They were homeless. They literally were testifying by video, because a lot of stuff's still by video, from the park because they don't have a home. And their claim, luckily, was ultimately granted. But still, you have to go through financial detriment just to get something that you're rightfully owed from the get-go. And it's wrong. So having that conversation is difficult because, people don't understand how long the process is. And it's just the way the law is written. You can't speed it up any quicker. It just is what it is, even though it's not right.
Right. It's nuts. I mean,
here's a crazy question. Do they have any recourse? Say their case is approved. They make a settlement. Is there any recourse for them to get anything, because their life was completely disrupted like that?
No, there's no real recourse. I mean, you can file something called a request for unreasonable contest fees. So the law is written. Ideally, insurance companies aren't supposed to contest a claim without reason, without a reasonable basis to do so. And but they do it still. And what your recourse is you can ask for reasonable contest fees, which might be like a monetary penalty almost against the insurance company for contesting a case that they shouldn't have contested. Mm-hmm. But still, that doesn't come to the end. Employers can appeal that. It's almost always at least suspended on appeal while they hash it out. So it's not something that you can actually... Realistically, as a practical matter, it's not something that really provides them any solace to the fact that they just lost everything while they're trying to get their benefits.
Yeah, I mean, and just thinking about that process, and Rob, in your world, let's just say it's not a third party case, okay? It could have knocked them. That one of the if somebody's fortunate, they'll get the lost wages, benefits. If it's a work comp situation, obviously Frank will obtain them, okay? But But in your world, it could take a couple years. I mean, how's that? What's that? Talk about the ebbs and flows of, you know, I'm the guy who just came into your office and said, the guy in California who spilled the coffee on himself got $2 million. What about me? Mine's much clearer than that. That's not the way it works. Talk about how that conversation is and setting them up for success at the beginning.
Yeah, sure. And I think sometimes we're overly eager to set realistic expectations because we don't want somebody going into the process not knowing that it's going to be a pretty lengthy process.
Yeah.
All this social media and billboards that you see don't help that because, like you said, they see or hear about other cases. They come in and think, oh, because that person got X amount of dollars, I should too. So we place a lot of focus when the minute a client comes in the door of saying, hey, this is what you're going to expect, or this is what to expect. This is what you're going to be
dealing
with.
Throughout the process, right.
And one of those things always includes insurance companies are not in the business of paying money. So even in the most clear-cut cases where the liability is clear, meaning it's clear that somebody else was at fault with a clear-cut injury, we still tell clients, this is not going to be a quick settlement. We're going to have to go through the process because we know this is how insurance companies function. So even when it seems like it should be an obvious, hey, the insurance company should pay.
Right, they just don't roll over.
Yep.
How often do you know, I'd be nervous about saying that to clients in both your worlds, even though there's not an attorney on the planet that could change that process under any, there is no, like for example, Johnny Cochran that's going to walk in and make that call and say, oh no, you're going to get your benefits on Monday. That's not the way, that's not the way. And by the way, the longer you go without being educated, and the longer you might be pushing that process back, that's why it's so important to get in early. But setting that process up, have you ever gotten pushback where somebody goes, well, I'll get another attorney in 5 minutes. It'll get me my case done next week, something nuts, because of all those clowns out there making those false,
I'm sure that potential clients have gone to other attorneys because other attorneys are not as transparent with the process. But I'd rather that be the case than to set expectations high for somebody. I want to know when I'm going into a situation, what to expect. So I want my clients to be in that situation.
And I bet you clients have come back and said, listen, that was sold false dreams. And 6 months down the road, that didn't exactly. You're just setting up a worse situation for that person if you don't set up those expectations.
Right. And it really is that you'll get some attorneys who will promise them the moon and the stars, will say, like at the outset, say someone got injured 2 weeks ago. And you'll get an attorney that'll just promise them like a specific dollar amount. And they'll say, oh, well, this attorney told me I could get $150,000 for my injuries. It's like, well, what do you, don't even know what your injuries are. You just got hurt. But you'll find attorneys who will say anything to either keep a client or get a client. And what a lot of people don't know, especially with workers' comp too, is how much you get is based upon what your average weekly wage was at the time you were injured. So say you were only making $20,000 a year and you think, or because someone you know got $100,000, you want that too. Well, for you, that's 5 years worth of disability pay. Are your injuries going to keep you disabled or out of work for the next five years? And so that's a lot of times the pushback you might get is that, people have expectations as to what they want. And, in reality, it just isn't attainable. But you'll get attorneys who will promise it just to try to get the case, right? Yeah, try to get the case. But I mean, it's better to be transparent now because if you can't
attorneys who have great reputations
aren't
doing that.
Yeah.
All you're doing is setting up a problem for later on.
There's two comments I want to make. Firstly, a lot of people get involved in car accidents. Rob, that's in your wheelhouse. And they get a call same week from some very nice lady from El Paso, Texas. I'm choosing that area because it's an area I'm trying to avoid right now. Not getting political. But in any event, they'll call it up and they'll say, you got in an accident. We're going to offer you $5,000. We want you to hold us harmless going forward. And a lot of people will say, that's a lot of money. And they will, and they're on a recorded line, and these people are experts. And when I tell them, not being an attorney, I said, look, we don't know what your injuries are yet. You're entitled to that representation. The fact that the insurance company is reaching out to you in the very beginning means they're trying to cut their losses, and you've got to be patient. You've got to meet a qualified attorney, and we've got to see how this thing plays out. So that's something that I think is very important, especially for car accidents, which is bread and butter. And I like to make sure they're represented. And if there are certain people, and without mentioning names, there are certain people or firms in the area which I know people have had bad experiences with. There's one firm that won't even answer your call. It's a big firm. You can't even call, even as a doctor. So I tell them, look, they spent all their money on advertising, but they spend no money on customer service.
And we only have...
And I think we know who they are.
listen, four minutes left, but the communication level, okay, and the bedside manner, I like to go around and also, but not only between professional and patient, but the importance of having that communication with the individuals at the table right now, the medical professionals and the attorneys. What's the importance, Doc? Talk about that in your office, bedside manner, communication with the client, and obviously with the attorneys.
When I first went into practice, I'll never forget a doctor who I went to help mentor me in my practice. He said something that I never forgot, and I say this to younger doctors who ask me questions about being in practice, which is treat every single patient the way you would want your mother to be treated.
Absolutely.
And that I live by that.
Rob?
Yeah, no, I think it's incredibly important. I mean, Dr. Grossinger hit on it earlier, but he focuses on treating the patient as opposed to, you know, the potential payment for that treatment. And I've seen that firsthand. We have a case right now with his office where, unfortunately, the client's not in a good situation from an insurance perspective, a health insurance perspective, and his office is working with us to help get our client the treatment that is needed. That's hard to find with a lot of the doctors that you encounter in Philadelphia, where they may recommend treatment because they see there's something on an MRI or a CAT scan that requires some type of injection. But as soon as they hear there's no insurance or something like that, they're not going to provide that treatment. And that's a real issue for us because we're dealing with a client who's stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Sure. Frank?
Yeah, I think open communication is important. Just understanding what the severity of the injuries are and open communications with clients too. I mean, we at our firm, we text with our clients repeatedly. They have my personal cell phone. It's 267-679-4963. I'm always responding by text, no matter what time of the day.
Frank, don't beat me to that, Frank.
I mean, if it's, I tell my clients, if I'm up, providing like I don't fall asleep while I'm trying to get my 8-year-old to bed, which I do fall asleep repeatedly, if I'm up, I'll respond to the text no matter what time it is, and I'll call back. Too.
8-year-old?
I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old.
So yeah. It's time for the gravy train to end, Frank.
But I'll wake up not knowing where I am. I'll be like, what? It's like 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. Like, what happened? So,
listen, we've all been there. Doc, if you would, and then your contact information will go around the horn for everybody's.
Sure.
Contact.
So I'll certainly talk to you, gentlemen. In a matter like that, you have my cell phone now. So any matter of finances, you call me personally. I'll make sure, you know, I'm looking for relationship building. Frank and I, somebody introduces Matt, actually, we're having a great relationship. Communication, my mother taught me, and she's an English teacher, she's 87 years old. Communication is the key to anything. So if you've got two intelligent people who care, you know, we want things to work out. We want your client, if they need 3 epidurals, if they need whatever they need that I can control, they're going to get. And it's an element of trust. I'm not worried. At the end of the case, we'll get paid. And, you know, and so I just love doing this. I love helping people. And, Joe, I want to thank you for putting this group together. Dr. Brady, I can say we work together so often. There's no more compassionate, caring, or intelligent doctor than Dr. Jim Brady. And I just want to mention that. My contact
number is... Thank you, Bruce.
It's true. And my number is 610-521-6063. I'm at Philadelphia International Airport. Don't pigeonhole me in Delaware County. Please look at me as the center of the wheel for all things Philadelphia.
Dr. Jim Brady, contact information?
Dr. James Brady, chiropractor, 215-245-1000. Offices in Bensalem, Olney, and Kensington.
Rob DeSandro?
Sure, my cell is 215-264-5005. And similar to Frank, it seems like I'm texting at all hours of night these days, but it's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
And Frank Udenson?
You can dial, if you're in the Philadelphia area, you can dial #4LAW. That'll come right to us, or you can give us a call at 215-398-6719, 267-679-4963, or check us out at winbiglawfirm.com, Instagram at winbiglaw_, the whole nine.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for being a part of the program, Dr. Jim Brady, Dr. Bruce Grossinger, Rob DeSandro, and of course Frank Udenson. Want to shout out to Wes in the producer's room. Thanks to Andrew Walker for making it all happen. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'll email you.